Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcasting art. This is episode 42. And this time again, I have here, as always, my guest, Artur Sosins from Latvia. Hello, Artur, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm actually at midnight here in between the days, and I'm glad to be in this special podcast because 42 is a special number. For all the science fiction fans should know it, because 42 is the answer to all questions.
Really? Damn, I'm not a science fiction fan. Sure, what is it all about? I'm not a nerd enough to know about it. Now you need to explain it.
Yeah, well, basically there was a book where there was a supercomputer and everyone was asking different questions to it, and the only answer it gave was 42.
What is that book? I remember something, but I forgot.
It was Isaac Asimov's, but I don't remember exact name right now.
Interesting. Is there a movie about that?
I doubt it, but, well, maybe.
I'm pretending to be Generation Y. We don't read books, we just watch movies.
I'm supposed to be that generation, you know?
So we are switching. Like, we read books and watch videos. Okay, anyway, this is a JavaScript hangout, enough of science fiction or nerdery. And today we have several interesting topics to talk about, a variety of subjects. And I'm going to start talking about precisely one, about a game engine. Let me share the screen here, if I'm finding the right window. Let's see. Oh, okay. This is supposed to be the one. And this is basically a game engine, actually a graphical game engine called CutJS. And it seemed interesting because sometimes you have a certain interest to develop games in 2D, especially after the huge successes of 2D games in JavaScript, like 2048. I don't know, Artus, have you been playing 2048?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I guess.
I even reached the 2048 value, so.
Yeah, well, I reached once, and but still, even after 2048, you just can't stop playing that, and that's bad because we have work to do. And, with this CatJS library, it seemed to be an eventual solution for creating games like this. I found it very straightforward, and here is an example. Let me increase the font here, and they give an example to a very simple game in which you define the basic view box where you'll be presenting your game. You can attach elements of the canvas that will appear on a web page. And I did not study this enough in depth to comment it in full, but it seemed very straightforward. Artros, did you try this library? What did you think?
Well, actually, from now and then, I need to create some demo games for some company startups, and usually when they're requested on web platform, HTML5 and Canvas, I try to pick a different engine every time so I could try them out. Recently I was working with CreateJS and PhaserJS, and all of these engines that I tried, they actually work pretty similar to ActionScript. You have a stage, you have a sprite for grouping bitmap objects, so most users that are familiar with ActionScript could really get into it and develop it. But when I checked out the CatJS, then it seems it's far away from the Flash ActionScript paradigm, and it's more like a natural way of how you would develop a game in JavaScript. So I think they even mentioned that the API is actually jQuery inspired, so most people who would know that, and that's probably a lot of JavaScript developers, could easily dive in and try to create again, with Cat.js rather than learning more action script-like approach.
So what I did not get, what is the difference? Is it the chained calling style or?
Actually, including chain calling and style, and in ActionScript there are like pre-reserved names that objects are usually called, like bitmap, as I said, or stage or sprites for grouping. But here there are images here that you can use CSS selectors, and I think that there was the innovative pin command that actually transformed. The object and something like that, but basically it's not trying to copy ActionScript but goes its own natural way how it would in JavaScript. Well, at least that's my opinion.
Right, so in your opinion, which approach is better? It's the jQuery style or the ActionScript style?
Well, it's hard to say as I'm used to more to ActionScript style because all the frameworks mostly use it, then it might be harder for me to get in, and I'm actually already not used to look at such code as as you see there are many callbacks and chains, and it's already hard for me to read. Also, once I was writing the same code myself, so it's just a preference of how you code. But
It looked, for me, it looked very straightforward, and probably you'll be more productive to develop games using this approach. But again, I'm not an expert. You probably know that thing better. Here in the in the screen that I'm showing, it's an asteroids type game, which at least for me, it brings back a lot of good memories. This is one of the first games I've ever played, and it seems to be pretty easy to develop games with this library. Well, I'm not a very good player, but okay. I haven't trained this game for a long time. I only have trained 2048 and Candy Crush. Okay, well, this is just to mention this library. Anybody that is interested in developing games may be interesting. This may be interesting for my son that lately he has been convincing himself that he should learn about programming because that's the way he's going to assure that his future will be around games. I'm not sure if he's really that inspired, but we never know. To be his future, at least. I've been helping him to go through the Code Academy because he's not fluent enough with the English, but it seems to be enjoying it. I don't know, Arthur, you also have a son? How old is he?
Oh, he's only 4-year-old. But when he was born, I was thinking that around 5-year-old, he might already know C or something, but well... Now I'm lowering my expectations.
Yeah, let him enjoy his childhood, please. And, my son, when he was like 7, he wanted to write a blog about games and reviews because he was really excited about what others were doing. He was seeing it on the internet and YouTube channels about games. But then the idea passed. No longer is interested, and I already told him that if he wants to pursue a career around games, he has to learn about programming, so he's pretty convinced. But that's just because it's better than going to school. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on with the next topic, with this hangout, on which I'd like to comment about an interesting article because it talks about an unusual topic. Let me increase the font here, which is the call stack size. What is the call stack size? It is basically the
how many functions deep you can go into calling each other in.
Yeah. Could be recursively or not. Sometimes you have called your functions too much because probably you are using some technique that requires recursion or maybe functions calling themselves, and the guy here presents the results. If you are using Node.js, the limit is 11,000 something, Firefox 50,000, Chrome 10,000. Well, given these numbers, what are they useful for? Does that mean that if you want to develop some application, you should be concerned to never call the functions more than this number of times? I think most people is not even concerned about that because they do not call their code that deep. I don't know. What do you think, Arthur?
Well, I remember once reached kind of the limit when I was trying to generate random words based on some dictionaries in recursion, and then I had to remake it all to make in a loop, which was much more uglier solution, but it worked. So yeah, there are sometimes some algorithm that would require you go really deep and try many combinations recursively.
So you exceeded the
well, I can't remember what, but it wasn't JavaScript. It was some other language that I was writing it in, and yeah, there was a maximum.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It depends on the language, but if you are using like C or C++, I don't know if there is a limit specific to the language. I think it depends on OS configuration.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. This is just a comment about this topic because it is unusual, not necessarily it may be useful, but okay, now if you did not know there is a limit, now you know it. Then you figure if that information is useful or not.
Later. Well, actually, the main topic here is that in ECMAScript script, there kind of will be no limit, or basically the limit will be increased because of how it all goes underneath. It will jump instead of call another function. I don't know exactly how it would work, but the idea is that there virtually will be no limit.
Yeah. Well, if there will be no limit, that will still then it will be a non-issue. So that is useful to understand how important is this information. Well, for now you know that in these environments you have limits even if in the future you don't have them. Okay, now moving on to another topic. I found an interesting article, which, well, I'm not sure if I could say I learned anything with it, but it talks about 7 JavaScript quirks the author wish he knew about probably when he started, because sooner or later you realize about them. Well, the first is about the equal sign.
Yeah. Can I first comment about the author? Because in first paragraph he's writing that he's coming from C sharp, and I have lots of friends. Well, not in this. I mean a little lower. One equality. Yeah. He comments that he's coming from C sharp, and I have lots of friends who are also in strictly typed languages, and all everything I can do in JavaScript or Lua, like assign a property to a class and runtime or stuff like that, they just see it as some kind of sorcery and don't want to participate in it. So if you are used to JavaScript, all of this will like come naturally to you, and you will see, I knew these points, or maybe, okay, I didn't know it, but it's understandable. But for some people who are coming from like other worlds, it really seems like sorcery, like a nightmare, like something that was not supposed to be, but it is, and it works.
Those are whiners. They are always complaining. They have never did the assembly language. They will complain about sorcery. Yeah, well, anyway, the 7 topics, let's just review them very quickly. The first one is about the equal sign. It can be one equal sign for assignment, 2 equal signs for comparison, and 3 equal signs to accurate comparison. So
now you can imagine how a C sharp user would compare number to a string and they are equal. It's like a head exploding.
Oh no, that was a blasphemy. You can't do that. You are from the L. Never mind. Well, you also have that in PHP and other.
Oh, weakly typed languages, basically.
Yeah, most of them have these differences, and nobody will die of that. Then, talking about the dot notation and bracket notation, which is basically the same approach of accessing an object or an array. So the index will be used to access the property or the array element. It's just the same thing. So here, person first name is the same.
Again, there are languages that completely does not have like associative arrays. They have an object like map object or something that are accessed completely different. So
right.
That's why it's amazing.
So they complain because they do that. And okay, but then talking about function context.
Function context is complete sorcery. Even
right.
Because most of JavaScript developers would be hard to understand all these cases.
Right. That's so true. Because even I develop JavaScript every day, but every time I go back there, I have to think before.
Sure.
Before I assume I know certain things for sure.
Yeah, you should test.
Right, and this is really evil in JavaScript because sometimes you want to emulate a private variable, and if you declare it inside the function constructor of your object, it's not exactly a private variable. It's more like a static variable, and it's not the same thing. And then if you use the this operator inside, it may lose context. It may no longer refer to the original object that you think you are manipulating, and you have to pass copies of the object to the private functions. And this is really messy. Personally, I hate it. I think in ECMAScript 6, the object-oriented approach will be more like in the other languages. And if you use ECMAScript 6. You no longer have to go through this confusion, but well, I can understand why the guy is saying that you wish you knew about it. And then there are the things about function context, and we're not going to go too much in detail in this article commenting all of this, but it's just to say that it's complicated enough so for you having to think all the time every time you use these things.
Yeah, but this is a must read if you are coming from another background language. You want to do something in JavaScript?
Yeah, I bet in geek contests they always ask these questions about JavaScript. So to know who is the geekest of all, to know all these differences without thinking, and then he talks about function expression, function declarations, which is another thing that can be confusing because
storing function in a variable is
Right. Variables is just a space. So how do you store a function in which is code in a variable? Oh, I don't know. It's a reference to the actual code somehow. And then again, something related about named functions and anonymous functions, which is basically the same way of viewing the question of the functions. To be assigned to a variable or to be declared. And then it talks about immediately invoked functions, which is something also weird. I never used it myself, but I noticed some developers liked it, which is declaring a function, an anonymous function, and call it right away.
Well, most common usage, I think, if you are creating a script that should be dynamically loaded in the web page, and it should call itself automatically when it's loaded, so that is the way to go. There is no other way.
It's a sort of encapsulating a global function, and not call it global because all the variables it uses inside are sort of private. Well, as long as they are declared with var. And well, this is just a mania. Personally, I do not use it myself, but I don't have anything against whoever uses it. It makes a bit the code unreadable, but okay, you pass the code to a beautifier and it becomes better, but it's still weird for those that are not used to it. And finally, it talks about the type of operator and the two-string prototype for objects.
Yeah,
they are not exactly the same thing. I don't know why you would confuse one thing with the other, or maybe it's not really talking about confusion. I don't know. I don't know what I got from this.
Even looking at a lot of code from experienced developers, you sometimes see they are using type of as a function and not as an operator. So there is a lot of confusion about this in JavaScript world.
Oh, really? They put in brackets?
Yeah.
The pair. Oh, I
understand. I think I did it myself at first. So.
First you said, I seen some developers.
I still see that in some code. Yeah, but. I did it myself. Right. So
those beginners, those amateurs. Well, okay, this is interesting, especially if you are beginning with JavaScript. This maybe it's something for you to go through because it gives you a preview of the weird things that JavaScript has, and that can be interesting for that purpose. Okay, but now moving on to another topic. This one is more like an opinion from a developer. I'm not sure if he's kidding or is serious because he swears a lot. And the article is called "You Have Ruined JavaScript." And it seems to be a criticism to framework developers that try to do it very enterprise-like. Lots of design patterns and lots of weird naming, services, providers, factories, whoever. And well, I did not read this article in depth, but just skimming it, I realized that the author is not very pleased with the complexity that certain frameworks add to the software development, that they are supposed to be simplifying things. And then they complicate things because internally, if you try to study the code, you have an hard time to understand.
Yeah.
Well, that's my opinion. I don't know what you think, but what I have seen in these frameworks, and that's another reason that I avoid them. Not that they are not useful. It's that, for instance, if you want to understand something inside, probably to see if you are understanding things or if it is a bug, you get lost. And this is not just in JavaScript. In other languages, it also happens a lot because it seems the developers are more concerned in implementing all the design patterns they learned in college to just show to their teachers, "Look, teacher, I learned my lesson about design patterns, and I should get a good grade." Except that in real world, often you do not code just for yourself; you code for others. Others that eventually will use and maintain your code later. So they still need to understand it, and probably. Certain approaches are more complicated than they should be, and they are not helpful. But okay, still I don't know if the author is kidding or being very serious. What I know it is that he had a lot comments. I did not go through the comments, but it is always interesting to see that these articles exist, even if they are not being too serious. I don't know. What did you think, Arthur?
Well, I actually have kind of mixed feelings about the article. On the one point, I think there are two type of languages. The languages that provide the whole environment, like Java and lots of classes, or like C# and .NET. And then the other hand, the languages that provide only plain operations, like JavaScript, plain operators, and some basics, and the users have to create everything around them themselves. So it is natural that everyone creates their own solutions, their own frameworks. But on the other hand, if you see of at all those frameworks that are out there and they're used in production, there is a book, a huge book, a thick book for every of the frameworks. So basically, it seems like everyone try to encapsulate everything, and so it grows out of proportions. And for newcomers, it is impossible to come in the already existing frameworks with lots of books to read and try to do something. So they are complicating things by themselves like that.
Right. And then they force certain dependencies. If you want to use a package, you need to use lots of other packages, and everything gets even more confusing than it already is, and it is not helpful. And if you say something to those developers, they say, oh, you are an inferior developer. You don't understand my beautiful design patterns. You need to go to school if you've ever been there. Well, never mind. Well, I don't know. Each one has his own style, and it's none of our business to judge each other's styles, but, well, we can't help having an opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one interesting topic. Now moving to another topic. This time about another unusual library, which is basically it's called Formula.js, and it is basically an attempt to implement Excel-like formulas to. In this case, apply to objects and arrays rather than spreadsheet cells. So I don't know if this is really, really useful, but okay, it's a library of a set of functions to for that purpose of manipulate objects and arrays somehow. It's
basically
not a small one.
Basically, they claim to do everything that you can do in Microsoft Excel. So it's sort of a framework to create your own spreadsheet or even spreadsheet framework again.
Right. Except that it is not a spreadsheet, it's just arrays and objects.
Yeah, but, you read them from the spreadsheet, and basically you create your own UI based on this framework.
Well, the UI is probably the whole application. It is much more than just these formula functions. But okay, I got the analogy. It's somewhat unusual. I don't know if it is that useful.
It's enterprise.
It has. Right, exactly. No, wait, I don't think it's this enterprise. Actually, this should be the opposite. It's quite straightforward. It has lots of functions to manipulate many things, and in the end, it's still a framework. I was wondering if I could see some example code in practice, but it seems all these seem to be global functions, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if global functions is the way to go, because there could be collisions. Well. Anyway, this is just to mention something that I found curious, not exactly something that will be useful to everybody. Now, let's move on to another topic, which is about one library. I think there are several libraries of this type. In this case, it is a library for syntax highlighting.
This library presents itself not like a syntax highlighting for a specific language, but a framework to develop syntax highlighting for a specific language.
Yeah. Yes, precisely. I like it a lot because it ties into a need that I'm having. For a long time, I actually wanted to add syntax coloring to JavaScript code in JS classes site when people want to see the code in JavaScript, and there was I did not have a good solution. In the case of the PHP classes site, the syntax highlighting is done on the server side by PHP itself, but it only supports PHP. For JavaScript, it would have to be something else. Other than that, there is a problem with the PHP syntax highlighting itself. It is already not very convenient, because what it does, it starts inserting tags in the middle of the text to do the necessary coloring, and it the size of the source code when using syntax coloring, all the HTML tags, it takes a lot of HTML. And for instance, if you want to display a large PHP file, it would take too much time to download, because it would be large. Yeah, exactly. And well, if you do it in JavaScript, you load the code itself and have JavaScript do the syntax highlighting on the browser side, so you don't have to transfer the whole code. So this is definitely one library that I is going to use, because it supports many languages, not just JavaScript or PHP or HTML or whatever.
And it can be extended to many languages also.
Exactly. I think it can be extended, right, to support different syntaxes. And well, this is great. I'm looking forward to use this in my in PHP classes and JS classes sites. But I think this is not the only solution for this purpose. But I do not recall any other library at the moment. I know there are others, but okay. This is just to mention this actually very briefly, to say it is useful for this purpose. And well, given that, we basically covered all the main topics that we wanted to comment regarding this podcast on lately. Happened on JavaScript world, things that were released recently. And now we are going to move on to one regular section that on which we comment about the winners of the JavaScript Innovation Award that is organized by the JS Classes site. So this time we are going to talk about the nominees for winning the Innovation Award in February. They were voting in March, and then in April the results came out. So since we always comment about after the results come out, that's now we can comment about any of these five packages. Well, let's comment about all of them. Arthurs, which ones would you like to comment?
Let me start with the winner. Yeah, let me screen share it first, maybe. Like that. Yep. So, the winner is Raul from Brazil, who provided a package that can embed the webcam stream, the stream from your webcam, into the web page. It can also handle microphone audio. Unfortunately, I can't show the I can show it in as example, because my webcam stream.
Oh yeah, it's taken by the podcast.
Well, at least I think so. But once I screen share it, maybe it will work. Let me try. Let me try it.
Let's see what happens.
No, it does not seem to allow me anything. So probably Google Hangouts is
probably see some error and you don't see anything.
Yeah, but I can show basically the code. The code is simple. We create the video object and then we populate it.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, you can embed the live stream and do whatever you want with it as an example. The mirror, create a mirror app, for example. So it's one of the HTML5 features, which is great. And Raul has wrapped it in a reusable component.
Yes, that's interesting. I can also demo it as well, but when I tried it, it prompted the user to authorize the access to the hardware, and it worked pretty well, Well, at least in the browsers that support it, well, I just tried in Chrome. I don't know if all versions of other browsers support it, because it's regular HTML5 objects.
Even the old Opera that I'm still using still supports it. So it
goes quite even Opera. That's Opera is awesome.
Yeah, it is. Okay, yeah. So next one is Gino, right? Yeah, Gino from India. Basically, he or she maybe, I don't know, created a JavaScript package that could load scripts dynamically. Let me try to demonstrate you. Mm. Of course, you don't see anything here, but if you look at the source, we will see that we include only this log.js file script, and all the others are listed under some variables to prevent the duplicated loading. And basically, if we inspect the element, we will see that all the scripts are loaded in the head and added.
Yeah.
So if you're using, you are creating some kind of web app that does not know what would you want in the runtime, and maybe if you are unspecific, one specific functionality, you need to load specific script. Basically, this is the way to go. And Gino provided the component, which
is and this could be useful also for making the initial page loading larger, because if you can load it libraries dynamically, you can load them later after the page is loaded, and then this is very interesting. I'm not yet ready to show anything, but the page of packages of the JS classes and PHP classes site is being redesigned, and it will be much more interactive, and so it will need more JavaScript libraries, and probably I'll use an approach like this to avoid the initial page loading overhead. And this is somewhat similar to RequireJS, right?
Yeah, I think that they're all quite similar to the functionality. There's nothing much to add, but okay, so and another one is Alessandro Vernassa from Italy. Basically, what he provided is a class to save your field web forms offline. Let me. I think I will. I even already saved one here. Yeah. At first, I thought that that it would like preserve the field form even if I did not submit it, like I can go back and see all the data I filled, but it actually saves the HTML file. You can see I almost filled the form here. Basically, it saves the whole HTML file in plain JavaScript, forcing the download, and this is great on the online forms websites where you have to fill and then, you know, like keep the data to for a later reference, so you can either print it, or if you don't have a printer, you can save it and then print it later or review it later on your computer. So that's a great option.
Yeah, that's somewhat unusual. I don't know what would be the use cases for this, but it's interesting because when it's a save, it's actually saving the whole page again, but this time it will have the values of the inputs already filled in. So that's why it is saving whatever you entered there. So it is interesting. So kudos to Alessandro Vernassa for his submission. Now, on my behalf, I would like to comment about the remaining two packages. Let me share the screen here. So basically, this first package that I want to comment is called JavaScript over Image Gallery. It's like a regular image gallery. I mean, this component presents a regular image gallery. And the idea is that it minimizes the user interactions to actually see the pictures in the gallery in full size. So you just hover the mouse on the top of the images, and it shows the pictures in full size, just just hovering the mouse. And this is interesting for users that sometimes they are too dumb and do not realize they need to click on the pictures to see them. And this way, the pictures are displayed in full size and immediately, and the user does not have to think too much. So it's interesting, just an example of improving usability of gallery pages for every kind of users.
Yeah, and there was there are lots of customizations available and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's a full-blown feature.
Right. This package was developed by Michael Milev from Bulgaria. I suspect that's not the right way to spell his name, but hope he can excuse us. And anyway, moving on, the next package that I wanted to comment about is this one, jQuery Toolkit. Basically, another package from Jonathan Gotti from France. He was one of the winners of the Innovation Award of the year last year. And it is an interesting library for creating widgets, and on which it takes properties for those widgets from CSS classes, I mean the attributes that it defines there. And this is an interesting approach. Maybe let me see if I can show you an example of the code. So here is an example page. And then
I don't get it.
It's too small?
Yeah. No, it's just too unreadable.
Oh, because it's not formatted very well.
Yeah.
Well, I can... Oh, wait. That's not... the way to increase this. Well, I can increase it, but probably it doesn't help. Well, anyway, what matters is this part here. You can define behaviors, and I think this is it from what I understood. You can define behaviors for this, and actually, this is probably just part of the example because...
It doesn't involve all the JavaScript, right?
Yeah, it's not defined here. Well, here is more an example of how it looks like. So it defines some elements, and it defines plugins to be attached to certain elements using jQuery. So, well, this is a bit abstract, but I think it was enough to explain what it was. So it's somewhat a different approach to things. Well, probably this example here is easier to explain. There is a CSS class here that determines the properties of plugins to apply to this image element in this case, and I think this is to apply a resizer for an image. And,
so basically,
small from are the properties.
If usually you provide properties like in the, some object configuration to the plugin, then in this case it could read it all from CSS properties. Yeah, that's interesting solution.
Yeah, well, as long as it doesn't clash with the existing CSS styles, actual CSS styles.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's to avoid clashing, that's why there is this TK prefix here. Well, okay, this is an unusual approach to do something similar to other solutions, but it's innovative because it follows a different approach. And you have defined the properties here, and over here you define what those properties mean. Small and zoom. Okay, that's interesting. Kudos to Jonathan for his submission. Now, finally, we are going to comment a bit about the rankings. So, as you may see here, this month the winner was Raul from Brazil, but over here we already have the rankings of the year. So by authors, so far who's going ahead is Jimbo from Canada.
Canada.
And then, well, this is just the top 10. There are other nominees here. And on the right side, there is a ranking by country. So far, and this already includes the winners of March, because we are 1 month behind. And so far, Italy is leading, tied with Canada, with two packages each. So they earned 6 points so far. And this is very soon in the year. Many packages have been submitted, many innovative packages, and over the year, I'm sure the Innovation Award Championship by countries will start heating up as more the countries get involved and other authors of the same countries send more contributions to be nominated as innovative, and they start gathering more points to the Innovation Award. So far, we don't have many packages, but we already are seeing some winners that are standing out, like Jimbo from Canada, that is helping alone so far Canada to go ahead, tied with Italy. So let's wait and see. I do not see here anybody from Latvia. I don't know why.
I'm giving them a head start, you know.
Oh, I see. Right. Well, I suspect that you are resting for your victory in the past year. That's not the case of, for instance, Franz Brunner from Austria, who was another winner, as well Jonathan Gorty. They did not rest, unlike those people from Latvia. So let's see if things start warming up, and the next month we'll get back to talk again and comment about the progress of these rankings. Many packages have been submitted lately, which is great. Many of them are innovative, and I hope next month we have more interesting comments about these rankings to comment, and depending on how it progresses. So basically, we have reached to the end of this hangout. I'd like to thank you again, Artis, for coming. Sure. I don't know if you have any final remarks, anything else you'd like to comment?
Yeah, well, I can only say that I hope that our podcast answered all your questions, and if not, then it's 42.
Oh, okay. And there's, well, I was wondering if 42 was related with 84. And 1984 is another book, another movie.
And that's something else, probably.
Well, the answer is off. Okay. Well, okay. On my behalf, that is all for now. So, bye.
Okay, bye.